Welcome to Focus on the Community, produced by the DLC Media News Center. I'm Dave Crooks. Today, my special guest is Republican State Senator John Ford. John was first elected in 2014 after beating 12-year incumbent Tim Skinner. Senator Ford represents District 38, which now includes all of Vigo and Clay counties, as well as Curry and Jackson townships in Sullivan County. Senator Ford is the chairman of the Senate Elections Committee. He is also the ranking member of the Family and Children's Services. He also serves on Appropriations and the Public Policy Committee. Senator Ford and his wife, Kirsten, live in Terre Haute with their twin sons. Outside of serving as a citizen legislator, he is also the director of business development at Thrive. And good morning, Senator. Welcome to Focus on the Community.
Well, good morning and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, sir. Well, I want to discuss what's going on with the upcoming short session of the General Assembly. As you know, I served for 12 years, and that's been a long time ago, but a short session, you've got a lot of work to do in a very short amount of time. Let's touch on the issue that seems to never go away, COVID-19. I read a recent report in the Indianapolis Star, which was credited to a business source called Wallet Hub, claiming Indiana is the least safest place in America when it comes to the risk of catching COVID. The article mentions low vaccination rates, which is barely at 50%, high death rates, hospitalizations, transmission rates, and positive testing rates. Do you believe that report is accurate? And if so, what do you think lawmakers can do in the upcoming session to improve our risk from COVID?
Yeah, I did not see that report, but I'm sure the numbers are, they're taking them off of the state's health department site, or at least I'd hope so. But there's no doubt that, we have room to improve on our vaccination levels. And, from what I've heard from our local hospitals, they are back to pre-pandemic numbers in terms of ICU beds that are available and so forth. So I think it's, when it comes to vaccination, I think it's up to people to decide what is best for them in talking with their doctor.
And I've definitely done that myself, and I've bought into to getting a vaccination. I've had my booster. I assume you've done the same, or where do you stand on it personally?
I have been vaccinated, yes.
Okay. Yeah. It seems like it's worth the any risks that are out there or any negative talk that you seem to see on social media. But nevertheless, yes, that's good advice. Talk to your doctor instead of maybe reading all the stuff on social media, perhaps. But what about proposed legislation this session? It's my understanding that there was a bill that even the state Chamber of Commerce was pushing during your organization day, but I guess it didn't go anywhere. But they were ready to have you guys push for a blockage of the president's mandate on, I think, employers of 100 or more. Is that bill going to have a chance to move this session? Because now I've noticed their top lobbyist, Kevin Brenniger from the chamber, he's now begging people on statewide media to get vaccinated to try to reduce all the problems that we're seeing with hospitals at capacity and such. Where are we going this session when it comes to COVID?
Yeah, there will be a bill in the House. I've already had a hearing on it, 1001. And with that bill, the goal of that bill is to, if a large business were to enforce a mandate that, they would have to take religious exemptions and put some guardrails on that topic, but that, really trying to get control of, who can mandate that their employees get this vaccination. A lot of my constituents are very uncomfortable with forced mandates. And, we're hearing a lot of stories of people who've been at the federal prison or been at one of the hospitals that are forced to leave because they don't want to get vaccinated and they're being forced to do so. And obviously this is in the court system. I understand, the Supreme Court may be taking up the issue if businesses can mandate, vaccines. So it's going to be a big topic this session. We'll see where we end up. I mean, I don't believe in mandates with the vaccine. I think everyone should be allowed to make that choice.
What do you think makes this one so controversial versus, as a kid, we were growing up before we got to go to grade school, you had to have a certain amount of immunizations and that's still required. What do you think makes this one so different, I guess, when it comes to the public not embracing it like we did polio and so many other vaccinations?
I think how the speed of all of this, we all on, March 12th, everything was normal in America and you woke up the next day and everything was shut down. And in states like Indiana, when we're shutting down basketball tournaments and basketball games, it kind of, is alarming. And I think just the speed of which some of our freedoms were lost with COVID, have really shocked people. And I think people are pushing back because of that and asking a lot of questions.
Do you think, though, sometimes that, you know, if everybody would embrace the vaccinations that are available, that maybe we would get rid of this threat quicker versus just battling back and forth whether or not we should get vaccinated? What's your thoughts there?
Well, I'm not sure if everyone got vaccinated that it would do away with it. I mean, at some point, you know, we're going to have to, you know, this is our new way of life, and, you know, people are going to have to, you know, people will have to get COVID, and hopefully what the vaccines will do is lessen the severity of COVID.
The legislature has also been talking about reducing the governor's authority when it comes to his executive decision-making when you guys are not in session. I mean, Indiana has a pretty powerful legislature when you look at the fact that you can override the governor's veto with a simple majority, and you guys are really more powerful when you're in session versus when you're not, of course. Where do you stand? Do you feel like there needs to be more restrictions on what the governor can do when you guys are not in session, or what's going on with proposed legislation this year?
Yeah, I mean, I was disappointed that the governor did not include us in more of the decision-making during the pandemic. I do think we should have the right to call ourselves back into session, especially when we're dealing with the amount of money that was thrown into the mix. And then, you know, the decisions, the freedoms, I mean, these were decisions that shouldn't be taken lightly. And I know the governor didn't, but I think sometimes, you know, the General Assembly, we're closer to the people. We hear at the coffee shops, we hear at schools more of what people, you know, their opinions. So I think we should have been included in more of the decisions. And we'll see it, you know, the governor is suing us over this bill that we passed last year. And so it is going to the Indiana Supreme Court at this point. You know, he's appealing the decision that sided with the legislature that we do have the right to call ourselves back.
And I noticed that he and the attorney general have been kind of throwing some punches back and forth in statewide media this past week or two, where apparently Todd Rokita, the attorney general, was interviewed on a TV station in South Bend where he didn't believe some of the state's numbers, and the governor called him out on it this week, saying that, hey, if you know that there's some kind of fraud out there with our numbers, come to me and the inspector general. And he kind of pushed back pretty hard finally this week about the attorney general's comments. Do you believe our state health statistics when it comes to dealing with the COVID pandemic right now?
I mean, I do. I do believe in the numbers. I think, you know, they're trying to put an accurate picture out there the best that they can. But I think there's still a lot of things that I wish they would share. I mean, share how many people who, you know, have had COVID, how many, you know, the antibody testing. Why aren't we doing more of that to see if folks, you know, have some immunity to this? I think just a lot of people have questions. And I think, you know, we're not necessarily getting all the questions that we would answered that we'd like.
Another big topic this session, Indiana is in pretty good shape financially. We've got a nice plus surplus. I think maybe some federal help maybe helped offset some of that too. But yet Indiana has always been pretty financially responsible. Where do you stand right now on the proposal that the governor tossed out a few weeks ago that he is apparently in favor of sending taxpayers back as much as $125 next spring?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt coming out of COVID, you know, this time last year we were really nervous going into the budget session that we were going to have to cut a lot of services. Fortunately, we came through the pandemic with substantial financial growth. You know, sales tax is up. You know, consumers continue to be comfortable buying things, and that's really helped. So I think, you know, what we did pass legislation a few years ago that anything in terms of a rainy day fund over 14%, we start giving the money back to taxpayers. And I wholeheartedly support that. So we, this year, people will be able to get a tax credit. And it's looking like after the most recent announcement that we're $3.2 billion over projections that in 2023, we again could have a tax refund. But I do, you know, it's not as sexy as the $1,400 check that the federal government sent out, but it is one that is paid for wholly, and it is the taxpayer money. So I support giving it back to them.
And again, to be clear, would it be a credit or would it be a direct check sent back to Hoosiers?
It would be a credit in this year's taxes.
Okay, very good. Is there a problem when it comes to teachers' pension funds? For example, when I served, that's all I heard from teachers, especially those that retired. You know, when's the state going to catch up on our liability through the teachers' retirement fund? Would you favor maybe using more of the surplus to help offset that, or is that already going on?
Yeah, we it has been going on every year where we've had extra money. Like last year, we threw almost $1 billion towards that issue, and we'll continue to fund, get that fund caught up. I believe it's over 80% fully funded at this point, but it is something that we continue to work on.
What's the total state budget these days? When I served, it was around $20 billion. Is it above 30 now, or what do we spend every 2 years?
It is about $32 billion.
So we spend $32 billion in Indiana state government every 2 years then,
every
right?
Every 2 years.
Right. A lot of people don't understand that, but that's a lot of money, of course.
It is a lot of money, and it's... we really take it serious that we try to spend it in ways that will be impactful in our communities. One with the budget last year that we were able to do, we put more money into K-12. It was a record amount of money. We were able to create something called the Ready Grant, where we were able to create a program that would hopefully at the regional level put money into quality of life projects that, don't necessarily fit into the economic development box nicely. So, and that announcement just came out a few weeks ago.
Okay. Let's move on to some other issues that are bound to come up this session. Currently in Indiana, if you run for school board, it's a nonpartisan race. However, there are some colleagues in the House and Senate that are pushing for a proposal this year that would require candidates for school board to declare their party affiliation. Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
Yeah, I think, it's certainly hearing a lot from our constituents that want us to work on school boards. I think, through the pandemic and virtual learning, I think parents got a look at the curriculum that kids are learning, the process that they're going through to learn. And I think they had some questions from school boards and were met with, weren't allowed to really voice their issues. We're hearing a lot of constituents who want some change in school boards. And I think the partisan issue is definitely one of them. We hear from some folks that to apply for school board to run, you apply in July. And then, you have a very short window till November. So they really don't get to know these school board members. So to solve that issue, some people have thrown out the idea of making them partisan. So we'll see where that goes. I'm okay with making them partisan to an extent because I think it's already there. I think we know where these school board members kind of already stand. So we'll see what the language says, but I'm interested in seeing the solutions we come up with. Some things we've heard, maybe they would allow the candidate to choose themselves, that it wouldn't be mandatory. We've heard ideas of maybe lengthening the window so that these candidates would apply in January like other candidates.
Okay. So in other words, they could proclaim they're a Democrat, Republican, Independent or whatever.
Yeah, it'd be up to them if they wanted to do that. That's one solution.
Huh. And then would there be like a primary perhaps then for candidates with this proposal?
It could be, yes. Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. So so that bill has a good chance to move, it sounds like.
I think there'll definitely be language on school boards. And I think it's going to be everything from school board candidates and how they run to how they run their meetings. There seems to be across the state some idea that school boards don't need to take public comment. So they're passing language for mask mandates, let's say, and not taking public comment. And, we've heard a lot of pushback on that. So I think we're going to try to make the school board meetings more transparent and allow parents to have a voice.
You had a businessman in Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, a Republican that became the new governor of Virginia. And, he's the governor-elect, I guess. He'll get sworn in this weekend, I assume. But one of the issues that kind of hit a hot button in that state, and a lot of people compare Virginia at times with Indiana, that CRT, critical race theory. Are you getting much talk about that? And do you feel like there may be some kind of a push as part of this school board legislation to address content of what school boards and schools might be pushing, including that hot topic issue with some?
Yeah, definitely getting lots of questions about curriculum in schools and that, parents seem to get the response from school districts that they're not teachers, they're not educators, they shouldn't be commenting on it. And I think that's really hit parents and constituents of mine in the, you know, they're upset about that. You know, they want to be a part of public education. And I think, you know, it's kind of an odd situation where I hear from schools and I hear from teachers that parents need to step up and be part of the process. But then when they do, they're met with not being allowed to speak at school board meetings, not being able to voice their concerns. So there's definitely some of that. I mean, I know a few years ago before I was elected in Vigo County, there was a process where parents were involved on picking textbooks. They had a whole textbook process that you went through, and parents were on that. And I participated in that for a history book and an arts book. And I thought that was a great process. I don't know if schools are still doing that or not.
Okay. Here's another issue that seems to be getting some traction this session. Will Indiana join several other states in perhaps making recreation cannabis legal in this state? Does that have a chance?
Yeah, there definitely, it sounds like there'll be some legislation. I think Cindy Zimke in the House is going to have a bill to legalize recreational cannabis. And then I think in the House or in the Senate, there'll also be, I think David Niskotsky is looking at filing some legislation.
Okay, so any idea how the funds would be used if that would become legal in Indiana in the proposals, or have you seen the bills yet?
I haven't seen the bills. And, you know, we would not really, in the General Assembly, had a debate on cannabis, either medical or recreational. So it'll be interesting to see if these bills get a hearing. I personally don't think this would be the year it would pass, but it would be, you know, interesting to see if we even get to debate the issue.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that it may take a few sessions for this to happen, but at least you're talking about it, which I think there are some people out there that would love to see a true debate on it, because we are behind, not just on recreation, but especially for medical.
Yeah. I mean, every state around us, I think, except for Kentucky, has medical or recreational marijuana.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. I assume you've been working with legislative services. That's the lawyers that are kind of behind the scene. They help you draft bills. What's your top legislative priorities this session?
So as many of you know, I'm heavily involved in the foster care and the DCS world. So I'm going to have a piece of legislation that would assign an attorney to each child in foster care. And so that attorney's goal would be just to focus on the child, not the parents, not DCS, nothing else but the child. And what the research is showing is in other states that have done this, like Arizona, it is cut the time in half that children spend in the DCS system. And, you know, our DCS system, you know, needs some changes. I mean, we have kids that are in the system for well over 4 years. After parents have given up their rights, and they need help getting through the process.
My wife is a CASA. She can't talk about some of the things that she's learned, but I can tell that it can be very stressful for those people trying to be an advocate for a troubled youth.
Yeah. I mean, it being a CASA has got to be one of the hardest things, I would imagine, because these stories aren't pretty stories. You know, they're not Ozzie and Harriet lifestyle stories. And we have a lot of kids that are really in bad environments that I think at the state, we owe it to them to get them in a better place.
Indeed. Other legislative proposals you want to share this morning?
I'm working on a collective bargaining bill with ISTA so that some of the rights that were taken away back in 2011 and 12, where they could bargain for classroom size and other things, we'd put that back into law where they could do that. But also in that bill would also require schools that have a rainy day fund. We have found with research with ICA that a lot of school corporations have more than 25% in their rainy day fund. And that's important because when they put it in the rainy day fund, it doesn't have to be used for collective bargaining. And so as we're trying to get teacher salaries up and competitive, you know, any resource we can use would help. So this bill would allow any amount over 25% in the rainy day fund to be used for collective bargaining.
Huh, interesting. Okay. We've got about a few minutes left, and I want to see if there's any other issues you'd like to discuss at this point in this upcoming session that the public listening would like to should know about, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I have a survey out there that was sent out to within the district, and would encourage everyone to fill that out because I do take the survey seriously. And then also online at iga.gov www.ln.gov. You can find me there, and you can find a link to the survey.
But you want to get those in pretty quick, since the session starts Tuesday, I guess, right?
So yeah, as soon as people can get them in. And we've received a lot of them back, and so a lot of the issues that I'll be carrying have come from the surveys.
I filled mine out, and I was amazed as a state rep years ago. I mean, you could get hundreds of these responses back, and it's a pretty good universe sampling from your district to kind of get a feel for what Hoosiers are thinking.
Yeah, I mean, it's an important part of the process to hear what people want, because we can get, in our own little bubble and not necessarily hear what constituents want. So, I mean, it's why I do things like knocking on doors and send out surveys.
So what motivates you to be a citizen legislator?
I think for me, it's, trying to better our community, to attract jobs and better paying jobs, but also to help people move out of poverty and help children. You know, I'm very motivated by the children in foster care.
And we'll talk about 2022 in a second, but there's one thing that I think you were pretty active on. Vigo County is finally going to get a casino, it looks like.
The license was awarded to Churchill Downs just a few weeks ago.
And I sat through that hearing, and I thought it was a very fair process, even though one of the losers has already filed a lawsuit, which the Gaming Commission has called meritless, and I think they're right. But it looks like Greg Gibson's effort on Lucy Luck, he gets his deposit back, and apparently, even though his effort failed, but he was trying to do the right thing as a local resident when it came to getting something out there for the community to have. Because as you know, gambling in our state's big business.
Yeah, I mean, it's here in Indiana, and that's for sure. I mean, I'm disappointed that a local businessman didn't get the opportunity. It was obviously my first choice would be for the local business owner to get it, especially someone who gives back to our community like the Gibson family does.
Yep, but it looks like Churchill Downs will at least be a good player when it comes to focusing on the Vigo County Casino. Do you think they're going to end up where they proposed their location behind the old Honey Creek Square, or do you think it might end up on I-70 where the other three casino operators were proposing that it would be located?
I would hope they would move east, and I'd hope the Gaming Commission would allow them to do that. Because I think, having a casino between our the Tarot Sewer Plant and the county jail is not the best location.
Yeah, even though some think that would be a great thing to revitalize that area, so to speak, but I'm kind of like you. I mean, the casino business is kind of transit at times. You got people driving down the interstate, which I learned during this recent hearing, we've got 30,000 vehicles every day that drive up and down I-70, and a lot of those folks, when they see casino this exit and they could see it from the highway, that might actually lure some out-of-town people to stop by and spend some money.
Yeah, there's definitely a science to it, and I think, Indiana started on rivers and moved to downtowns, and now I think interstate seems to be the model that works in the gaming industry.
Next year is a re-election year for you. Are you running again?
I am running. Announced a few months back that I will be running for a third term.
Okay, and why should people keep you in the state house, I guess, would be my next question.
Well, I would hope that they would see all of the work that I've done, like the connector going to West Terre Haute, the remodel of Holman Center, the number of projects that have happened at ISU, but also, my focus on children and family. I think it's, important, and I think I've added a voice for foster parents in the process and have helped kids get to a better place. And I have a lot more work that I'd like to accomplish on that.
Well, you're very visible. I see you everywhere, and you might tell our friend Representative Morrison to come see us sometime. I'll give him the same air opportunity as you. So,
well, I will let him know.
tell him Happy New Year, and the same with Representative Tanya Paff. I'll be happy to reach out to her, but you know how it goes. Time gets away, and it's like, wow, it's all of a sudden the new year and the new session is starting. So keep us updated throughout the legislative session. If you want to share some additional information, we'll give you some more air opportunity through our news and programs like this to kind of keep you in touch with the community.
Well, thank you. I appreciate this opportunity, and I will definitely be in touch.
And again, if people want to reach out to you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Best way is either through email at john.ford@iga.in.gov.
And if they do a simple Google search, they'll find your legislative website, won't they?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Senator, thanks for your time, and Happy New Year to you, and good luck in the upcoming session.
Well, thank you, and Happy New Year.
This has been Focus on the Community for the weekend of January 2nd, 2022, produced by the DLC Media News Center. For a download of this show and other past programs, visit any of our radio station websites. I'm Dave Crux. Happy New Year, and thanks for listening.